Okay, so I wanted to say a bit more on Pratitya Samuppada and emptiness, how they relate, how this co-arising, co-production implies emptiness. So emptiness, meaning empty of inherent existence or empty of separate existence, without core or essence, not findable, not graspable, not pin-downable, if you can say such a thing, not findable in time or space, and where else would you look? That's about it for the possibilities, isn't it? Mysterious, boundless. So when we look, we can't find anything but constant change, constant flux. It's constant becoming and ceasing, becoming and dissolving. And we're going to be doing some looking in this way the next few days, looking at impermanence. So we find this constant flux and we find relationship. So you could say everything is relational or everything is connected, but it's not just that it's not that everything, just that everything is relational or connected, is that it's only relational. There is only connection. So it's not that you've got these things and they're connected, or you've got these things and they're related to each other. When you actually look, all you will find is the relationship, the relating, the connections. And this relationship, these relationships are what we call Pratitya Samuppada. So everything is both empty of inherent existence and full of the arising and ceasing play of appearances, which is Pratitya Samuppada. So I want to say more about the co-production, the co-arising element, and how that implies, reveals emptiness. So on our heart-mind map, we've got all these experiences which co-arise. They lean on each other. So in the Pali Canon, the metaphor that's used to convey this is a stack of corn. So this is from Sariputra, who's one of the Buddha's chief disciples. He uses this metaphor of a corn stack. So there are these sheaves of corn, and they're leaning against each other, so that if one falls, the other has to fall. Has to. Except it's not like then you're left with the sheaves of corn on the ground. It's like one thing falls, the other falls, and then there's nothing there. There's nothing to be found. There's a dissolving, ceasing. There's no stack separate from the sheaves. So if one thing arises out of another, it's quite mysterious, isn't it? It's just mysterious. So A arises out of B, and B arises out of A. It's just not how we normally, it does not fit, does it? How we think of things as being. Our whole kind of conceptual framework is kind of blown apart, really, by that, isn't it? Seems impossible. So I wanted to read a tiny bit from Bhante in this book, Living Wisely. So it's his commentary on Nagarjuna's book, The Precious Garland. So Nagarjuna goes through this extraordinary sort of what Bhante describes as the hunting down, hunting the rational mind out of its holes. So it's kind of relentless, and he applies it to a number of things. He applies it to the emptiness of the self, emptiness of time, and it's relentless. He's like, you're sliding off it there, nope. You're sliding off it there, nope. for this reason, and he's just, yeah, relentless. So Banti says, to be brought up sharp against the limitations of one's ordinary consciousness is utterly frustrating, but nonetheless entirely necessary if one is to apprehend the truth of things. To imagine that you've arrived at that point when you have not even stretched your ordinary consciousness is a big mistake. It is by exhausting the possibilities of rational thought that we enable the truth of things to reveal itself. There's no use in giving up on the possibilities of penetrating reality with the dualistic mind prematurely. Don't give up prematurely. In fact, there should be no conscious decision to renounce the cutting edge of reason in our search for truth. Only when one has truly arrived at the limits of one's thinking, one might say, can one become aware that the truth cannot be thought, that it can only, in the final instance, be experienced directly for what it is. So, in a way, there's lots of ways you could reflect or work with this co-arising. Could, as Banti's saying, just go there with a rational mind, feel the impossibility, and then see what happens. See if sometimes there's just letting go when we reach that limit, the rational mind's limit. Or allow the mystery of it. I find my tendency is to really want to go terrier-like and just kind of like, no, I must be able to understand this. But at a certain point, just allowing the mysteriousness. And then maybe the image is helpful. We can just hold that, the corn sheaves, hold that in our mind. And then there's just also looking in our own experience at this co-arising, just seeing it for ourselves that that's how it is. So I'm going to give some examples of the co-arising. So craving and aversion co-arise. So they're like two sides of the same coin. Aspects of each other. You could almost kind of, I was thinking you could have the composite noun, really, a composite word, craving hyphen aversion, just as you do with push-pull. So it's a push-pull, isn't it? So with craving and aversion, you don't have the push without the pull. So an example from my own experience. In dependence on anxiety or frustration, that's resisted, that I'm not wanting to experience, that I'm averse to, craving for cake arises. It's wanting to cloud the mind with the cake, to substitute a pleasant sensation in order not to feel the frustration or the anxiety. So the craving for cake, the aversion to the mental state co-arise. And it can be really interesting to look, you know, where there is craving, what's the aversion? What's the other side of the coin that's going on? Sometimes it's just boredom. You know, sometimes there's something else. Sometimes there's something else that needs turning towards. So whichever one's going on, looking, what's the craving that's arising? You know, I don't want this experience. Where's that taking me in terms of grasping craving? So craving and aversion co-arise. Yeah, a good question with the aversion is, what aspect of my experience am I? Or if there's, yeah, what aspect of my experience am I sliding off? I really like that expression Sadhananda used. Okay, so dukkha and craving are aversion. So, noble truths. Dukkha arises out of craving aversion. Really, that's a co-arising, isn't it? It's a co-arising. It's not like you have the craving and aversion, and then there's dukkha. It's like the craving or aversion is the dukkha, isn't it? It is dukkhaful. It's painful. They're not separable. And then greed, hatred, and delusion. The hub of the wheel co-arise. Craving and aversion, or greed, hatred, and delusion, ignorance, they co-arise. So how do they co-arise? So take the example of the illusion of separate self. So there's a conceiving, there's a view there of a self that's separate. So separate from experience. So there's an I that's kind of having the experience or making the experience happen or watching the experience. So it's that I sort of somehow separate from the experience. So that's the view. And then craving and aversion are like the action of separating from experience, either pushing it away or trying to reel something in. If we're trying to reel something in, that we think that there's something there that's separate, that's not me, that I want, or something that's separate, that's not me, that I don't want. So the action and the view co-arise. So maybe that sounds, I don't know, maybe that sounds a little bit abstract. I'll try and sort of fill it out a little bit more. So it's like the sense of self, the illusory sense of self, is the wanting. It is the wanting and the not wanting. So when there's a strong sense of self, it's always arising with a strong sense of craving or aversion. And when there's less craving and aversion, there's less sense of self. There's less sense of something solid and separate. And yeah, craving and aversion always arise with tension, as we were talking about. So tightening in the body, tightening in the mind. And that tightening, it kind of creates that sort of illusion of solidity, something separate and solid here. So this is something we can observe really readily, because there's always some sense of self, short of awakening. So we can observe this spectrum sort of arising and falling. When we're right in the midst of some strong push or pull, we can feel how there's that sense of separation, sense of solidity, separate self, separate other, or object that we're wanting, not wanting. And then we can feel that lessening when we lessen the push-pull. So, yeah, craving, aversion, delusion, co-arise, non-craving, non-aversion, non-delusion, co-arise. So later on, we're going to just do some stuff within the metta practice, exploring this separation, the illusion of separation. So I'm aware that's quite a lot. I'd quite like to not have a full sort of question and answer now, but I was thinking maybe a middle way would be to have one question if somebody's feeling a burning question in relation to that. I can feel a certain fire in the corner. Oh. And some fire here, yeah.
Something actually, it's not a question. It's just that a very simple image that I have found very helpful. people in relation to this, which other people might do, is the idea of concave and convex.
Okay, just pause there whilst I repeat what you're saying, Mary. So an image that Mary's found helpful in relation to this is convex and concave. Thank you very much. So Mary's saying that, you know, it's a very immediate image of co-arising that she's found very helpful. You cannot have convex without concave. They co-arise. Same as left and right. We don't just have left, do we? Left doesn't exist. Except in dependence on right. It's relational. And everything is like that, believe it or not. Okay, great, thank you. So maybe let's just have a minute to absorb before we go on to the metta in movement.